No vaccine can protect you from the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast overdue for a visit to the dentist. And now, counting backwards from 100, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Woo-hoo, boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast time again. That's pretty exciting for me, and I know it may be exciting for some people in the audience. I'm hoping for a lot of people in the audience. This, as my Canadian nephew told you, is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. I don't know exactly what Drew McMillan said about me, but I'm sure it was complimentary and cast me in a good light. So we're here to have fun with Medicare. Most people think of Medicare as something dull, boring, and drudgery-like, and we think of it as exciting and happy, happy times. So I'm very happy to share those happy times with you, the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast audience. All of this happiness is based upon my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, the simplest and easiest guide ever. And that's on sale at Amazon. You can have a paperback. You can have a Kindle version. And recently, a lot of people wanted that Kindle version. Normally, it costs about $3.80. And I had a little one-day free promotion where the book was free, the Kindle version of the book. And this was last Monday. And people, to the tune of 2,407, walked away with those books. 2,407 of my book went out the door from Amazon. And so I was pretty happy about that because that's potential clients for me. As you know, I sell insurance and I like to help people set their Medicare coverages up. So these are potential clients that may ask me for help after they've finished reading the book and when their time to enroll in Medicare approaches. So anyway, we also have, in addition to those two editions, we've got an Audible version. If you buy that for about, I think it's $6 or $7, then you can listen to me reading the book to you. How exciting is that? So who is the lazy man? Why do we have a lazy man in the title of all of this? The lazy man is any man or woman who's reluctant to have to learn about Medicare. You know, they might look lazy because they avoid the process of studiously learning all there is to know about Medicare. But in reality, what they're doing is saving themselves a lot of aggravation because by contacting me, by reading my book, by discussing their questions with me, they get to avoid all the non-essential information and minutia that does not apply to them. So by associating with me to a certain extent, it becomes much easier for people to slide from Obamacare into Medicare. Now, generally speaking, we also have a 30-second radio spot that I asked Randy Carson to play. That radio spot is going to be played on WLS frequently for a, I don't know, 2 or 3 week period to see if people in Chicago or within range of that 50,000-watt blowtorch have any interest in talking to me about Medicare. So that's going to be a fairly expensive experiment to see if our radio spot will generate some more clientele for us. So I can I would like to have Randy play that now. You listeners out there, just pretend that you're near Chicago listening to WLS, and here comes the radio spot. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Okay, so how did that sound when you pretended you were listening to it on WLS? I hope it sounded as though it was enticing and motivational. That's the hope anyway. So, Randy, thank you for playing that. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I really am. No, I have
took him a while. It took him a while to come up with that answer.
I'm about frozen, Doug. I mean, my God, it's what is it out here today? It's 68 degrees, which is the moral equivalent of Arizona winter.
That is incredible. In Illinois here, it's not, it's, you know, probably a couple of degrees colder than that today because it's been rainy and cloudy, but I would expect 70 degrees on a day like this in Illinois, and that's warmer than you guys have had for the last few days. Yes. Is the world coming to an end? Is this what global warming is going to be like for us?
Global warming, it's not working out here. It's actually going the other way. What's that?
I know, but I don't know any other term. I mean, all the tree huggers are screaming about global warming, and it keeps getting colder. What the heck is going on?
I'm not sure what's happening there, but I have another thing that I was going to ask you.
I would like to hear that question.
Okay. So have you noticed that I have put Drew's new work into the rotation for the last two episodes?
I heard one the other day that sounded vaguely familiar, and I thought, oh, that's Drew in his new batch of recordings. His voice sounds absolutely perky and happy, and I'm thinking it may be the presence of Nora inspiring him to greater heights, his little daughter, Nora.
I think so, because, again, as you know, the radio spots that Drew does for us just tickle me to death. I actually sit down and listen to all of them before I put them into rotation to see which ones I'm going to like best. And as you know, I have a favorite from the very beginning series that you did. And right. What is that favorite?
That would be coming to you from his Fortress of Solitude in Cave Creek, Arizona.
Yes, I love that one.
But, you know, occasionally, every day I'll play an episode for Mary so that she can apply a letter grade for, you know, the quality of the episode. And we haven't had any D's yet, but we've had a few C's. And occasionally we get an A+ from her on an particularly entertaining episode. And I can always tell when the A+ is coming down the pike, because as Drew begins reading his introduction to the episode, she'll start giggling. And so I've got to make sure that she giggles more, because then we're going to get more A+.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you know, Drew is so darn good at what he does.
Absolutely.
That, I enjoy the heck out of the little spots and everything else that goes with it. But yeah, I just can't get enough of that one about your Fortress of Solitude.
His TV series came to an end after, I think, 20 years or 21 years or something like that. And so he had to go out and get a job with a different production company. And because he's got a CPA, he also is qualified to do all kinds of accounting work. And so this production company hired him to, I don't know, run their business office, I guess. And he sent me the link to their website. And on the link that says, here are the production projects we're working on, there are like 50 different things this company is doing. Now, in his typical modest way, Drew said, you know, none of these things are really ready for prime time yet. But it looked to me like these were massively professional projects, some of them comedies, some of them dramas, some of them documentaries and stuff like that. So I'm hoping to hear more good things about entertaining programming coming across the border from Canada. Right now, my only choice is Heavy Rescue 401. So I'm looking for a little more variety.
Well, as you know, I kind of got hooked into that one too when I was in the hospital. Uh-huh. For some reason, the hospital had it. I can't find it on my stuff.
It's so, on the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel.
Why
yes.
would it be on the weather?
Because in every episode of Heavy Rescue 401, the weather is miserable. It's snowing and freezing and everything's cold and miserable.
Well, I'd like to know that, because I've been looking for it because I really liked it.
Yeah. Well, it's even Mary finds it fascinating. You know, who would have thought a girl would like, you know, crashes and the heavy equipment used to salvage things. And it was the kind of thing I would have predicted she would hate. And it turns out it's one of her favorite shows. So the Weather Channel is your choice for that. And then, of course, she won't watch She will not share the experience with me of May Day, another Weather Channel show, because it is a an autopsy of air crashes. So here's an airplane flying along, and they have reenactments of happy passengers and all that stuff. And you don't know at the beginning. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes there's a happy ending. But more often than not, all those people are going to wind up dead by the halfway point of the hour-long show. And then they go into the exact process by which they reconstruct the airplane or the accident and try to experiment to see what went wrong. And I find that fascinating, too.
Yeah, yeah, I do, too. I do, too. And the one thing, as you know, if after you've watched a few of those types of shows, that there's never one thing that did it. It's always a series of things.
And they find it very easy to lead you astray. Somebody came up with an idea that the pilot fell asleep. And so then they tested that hypothesis, and they heard his voice talking on the voice recorder the whole time, saying normal pilot stuff. So, okay, they had to cancel that theory and think about something else.
Yeah, it's always a series of events that kind of stack upon one another to the point that you cannot recover.
Yeah, and in fact, sometimes they do the wrong thing because their brains tell them, you know, in what our experience is, we should be pushing on that stick and going into it, or pulling back on the stick to get the nose up. But in reality, the instruction book says push down on the stick so that the nose goes down, you gather airspeed. And it's completely backwards often that leads to the accident or the incident or whatever.
Yeah. So. Oh, exactly. Exactly. I totally understand. I've watched a lot of that type of material. So you know what we need to do today, right, Doug?
We probably need to talk about Medicare to some degree, wouldn't you think?
We have got to bring it on the table as far as a topic, because, you know, our audience would be very disappointed if we didn't talk about it at all.
Yeah, well, in this case, we're not going to disappoint them, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to deduct all this expensive equipment as a business expense. So let me dive in here. We are just before or one day ahead of the start of AEP. Which is annual election period, during which time people that have Medicare Part D drug plans or people that have Medicare Advantage plans are allowed to dump their existing crapola and enroll in new crapola that they hope will not be as bad as the crapola that they want to dump. That's the way I explain it in the book. Basically, people are with Medicare Advantage plans, and to a certain extent, drug plans, are allowed to exchange their plans from October 15th to December 7th of every year, and their new plan that they've chosen will start on January 1st. So there's this big frenzy of Medicare Advantage salesmen that go around this time of the year in order to try to drum up new business for their particular plans from the disgruntled people that have been enrolled in other plans during the course of the past year, or maybe 2 years or 3 years. And it might be that the plan has changed important elements and caused them to be unhappy. It might be that their doctor, their hospital has canceled their contract with the insurance plan. And so they want to find a plan that actually contains the medical personnel that they've been dealing with for years. There are any number of reasons. Maybe somebody said a nasty poo-poo word when they called up, and it's a common occurrence. And so even people with Medicare supplements who don't have to do anything, because a Medicare supplement plan is always going to do exactly what it did the day you bought it. It's not going to change. It's going to keep cranking along for the rest of your life. But even those people, those clients of mine that buy a Medicare supplement are confused by all the advertising and Joe Namath and Jimmy J.J. Walker flapping their arms around and offering all this free stuff to people. So I normally advise my clients that I don't like Medicare Advantage plans. I don't recommend them, and I don't sell them. And then what happened a couple of years ago? Yeah, Randy's giving me a thumbs up. I know that's pretty good, but the time I got two thumbs up from him was it was like a red letter day that will live in infamy. But anyway, I discovered a couple of years ago a Medicare Advantage plan that is the one Medicare Advantage plan I don't hate, and with certain caveats, I'm happy to recommend it to my clients who are looking for a high deductible plan that will allow them to profit from their health insurance. In other words, these people are not risk averse, they're risk tolerant, and they're confident in their continued good health. So they say, why should I pay a lot of money? And a lot of money could be anywhere between $150, $200, $225 or more per month for a Plan G Medicare supplement, when they could, in fact, have a plan that gives them money back. So that plan, there are several plans like this, but they're all regional. They mostly are available in one local area or a small regional area. There's one company that is in about 35 states, and that's the only one that I recommend to people. And so because it's not 50 states or 57 states, as Barack Obama would have you believe, I can't even offer it to everyone. But for my clients who are interested and who live in one of the states this company operates in, then I offer them the opportunity to peruse a Medicare MSA. And it's a Medicare medical savings account. And the company that offers it is Lasso Healthcare Insurance Company. And so this is one type of Medicare Advantage plan. And as I said, it's the only Medicare Advantage plan I've seen that I would hardly recommend to my clients. And so what happens here? Just like with all Medicare Advantage plans, an insurance company is preparing to offer a plan that is actuarially equivalent to the benefits of Medicare Part A and Medicare Part B. And if they want to, they can throw in a bunch of other stuff into the mix, but that's all kind of voluntary. The first thing is actuarial equivalency to your traditional Medicare. So when a person enrolls in the Medicare MSA plan, they say to the plan, I want you to insure me. I want you to provide my health insurance, and I'm going to give up my Medicare Part A and Part B coverage. So in other words, I will not be looking to the government's Medicare product to pay my medical bills. I will be looking to you, the insurance company, Lasso Health Insurance Company, to pay my medical bills, and I will live under your rules. Now, the MSA is a medical savings account. So the first thing that happens is the Lasso company takes away your Medicare Part A and B, and they just hold it. They put it off to the side, and it just sits there waiting in case you ever want to come back to it. And they issue you an insurance policy that has a really, really big deductible. That deductible could be either $5,000 or $8,000. And then they give you a chunk of money. That money that they give you actually comes from the federal government, which pays the insurance company to insure you. So the federal government gives them a chunk of money, and the insurance company then says, okay, we're going to set up a bank account in your name. Let's say it's my name. Let's say it's Doug Jones's name. So they're going to set up a bank account in my name, and they're going to put a chunk of money like $5,000 or $3,000 into it. And then they're going to say, all right, you now have a bank account with a chunk of money, and that chunk of money's got to last you all year. So there is no monthly premium, but you have to stay healthy. And if you stay healthy, then you're not going to spend anything, maybe a doctor's appointment or something, but you're not going to be spending any particular time or money on health insurance expenses. And so at the end of the year, you're going to have that chunk of money that you can keep, save, invest, spend at the casino, or do anything you want to with, and they will give you another chunk of money for the next year. And so on and on and on. Now, what is your risk here? Well, the high deductible medical plan that they give you has a deductible that's larger than the chunk of money that they give you. So let's say they give you $5,000, but they give you also an insurance policy that's going to pay 100% after a deductible of $8,000. So if you had a bad year, let's say that you got caught in a stampede of wild asses, you know, donkeys, and you were dragged off to the hospital and it took you a while to recover. Well, then you likely will be at risk of losing that additional $3,000. So they give you money, you wind up paying your hospital bills with that money, plus there is an additional amount at risk over and above the money they've given you, and you'll have to fork over some money out of your pocket to pay the rest of your medical bills until the high deductible health plan that Lasso has given you kicks in. When it kicks in, then you will have no more medical bills because all medically necessary bills will be paid for you by them at 100% for the balance of the year. And what happens the following year? They turn around and give you a chunk of money again, put it in your account. And once again, you have the choice of spending it, frittering it away, taking it out in the backyard and setting it on fire, or saving it for the possibility of your deductible being, you might get caught in another accidental situation that's going to cause you injury. You might come down with an illness that costs a bunch of money. But the important thing to remember is you are in control of the fund. So who would this appeal to? This would appeal to people who feel pretty comfortable with their fiscal situation. In other words, if they had a bad medical year, a lot of big medical bills, they feel comfortable reaching into their pocket for the few thousand dollars that they would need to use to make up between their gift from the insurance company and the deductible from their 100% high deductible health insurance plan. So it's a matter of rolling the dice to some extent, or feeling confident, you know, feel like you're rolling the dice. If you have a history of good health and you have no reason to think that's ever going to change, then it's maybe not so much of a risk, but there's no monthly premium and nobody's going to come after you for additional money unless you have a medical expense that is not within your purview to pay. Then all of a sudden there could be trouble. But if you've got the resources to reach into your pocket and come up with a couple of $1,000 every year to prepare for the worst case scenario, which rarely happens, then this could be an excellent plan choice for you. And I've mentioned this in the book. I've got a chapter about it. What are the risks that I would foresee? What are the things I would warn people about? Knowing that Medicare supplements are the plans that I mostly talk about, and they're the greatest Medicare protection you can find. In other words, you get Medicare A and B from the government, and then you get a Medicare supplement from me to put a lid on your possible losses if you have excessive medical expenses during the course of the year. Well, the risk is that if during the course of the time that you're in this wonderful MSA plan and you're enjoying the money that the federal government gives to the insurance company and that they pass through to you, if you come down with some dread disease that causes you to lose your good health, it's entirely possible that you would not ever qualify to repurchase a Medicare supplement again, giving you that excellent, excellent insurance protection. If you lose your good health and the insurance companies do not accept you back into the fold of Medicare supplement customers, then your only choices are to stay with the MSA plan, which is not a bad choice, or to switch to a different Medicare Advantage plan. At this time of the year, this would be from Otco, and Randy's going, nope, don't do it. Don't do it. But if you feel as though you're always going to have large medical expenses for the rest of your life every year, there are Medicare Advantage plans out there that do offer first dollar coverage for some things. In my opinion, that's a poor substitute. So I would hope that if you wanted to change plans out of your Medicare MSA after a few years, that it would be to fill out a health questionnaire and qualify for a Medicare supplement plan. Or, you know, the other obvious way to avoid that risk is to go with a Medicare supplement plan right out of the box. But a Medicare supplement plan is going to cost you some money every month, and it's not going to give you a big chunk of money at the outset. And so that's why this Medicare MSA concept has appeal for a lot of people. And I would like to have my insurance plan pay me a bunch of money, Randy. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often, but the math just doesn't work out that way.
Well, you know, I would too, but this is an actual question. This is something that occurred to me while you were explaining all that. You may be aware of the fact that out here in Arizona, we're getting a bunch of advertising saying someone who shall remain nameless, they're all politicians, are out fighting for us to, you know, keep Medicare Advantage plans funded and on the way to Nirvana. Are you aware of that? And what is that all about?
I didn't know that was going on, but it doesn't surprise me. Medicare Advantage plans have been supported by the most conservative of politicians, and it kind of pains me because I don't think they do justice to their clients. I think they're doing a disservice to the Medicare enrollees who sign up for a Medicare Advantage plan, but it's good for the government. And the reason is when Medicare came along, the government was very paternalistic. And they said, we're going to provide medical insurance for the aged and the infirm. And so we're going to set up our own insurance company. Now, that implies 1 million government employees on the payroll. And these employees are all insurance company, you know, they're doing stuff that insurance company people do, but they're not in the private sector. They're being paid with tax dollars. And every time they cover an insurance bill or a medical bill for a person that's enrolled in Medicare, it costs a ton of money because there's all kinds of stuff, including that employee's pension. I mean, the employee that writes the check is told how much to write and who to send it to and all that by other employees. And it's just a huge labor intensive money sink for the government. So when Medicare Advantage plans came along and private insurance companies said, hey, we'll set up the plan, we'll administer it, and we'll just make sure that we provide actuarially equivalent coverage to Medicare for our clients, then the government said, and what's in it for us? And the Medicare Advantage plan says, well, you're paying like $10,000 per person for a person on Medicare. Give us less than that. Give us $8,000 and we'll take care of that for you. And so the government is money ahead, and they don't have to have all these employees that eventually have to retire and get on government pensions and cost them a whole bunch of money. I mean, look at the money the government spends on candy at Halloween, you know, for their employees. Those people are spoiled rotten. So it's cheaper for the government to hand out some money to a private insurance company and say, here, go run a Medicare plan that people will like and leave us alone. Because with regular Medicare, the government has to do all this bookkeeping, and they have 1 million employees. With the Medicare Advantage plan, they're just basically giving a check to the insurance company, and that's it. So that's why it's good for the government. It's bad for the people who have to enroll in it.
Okay, so every time I see this particular type of an ad, I am doing well for my own protection to hang on to my billfold because it's not doing anything for me, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Unless you have a fiscal disaster happen, you're not going to be benefited by any of the stuff they talk about in those ads because that's all for people on welfare.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, when we get offline, I'll tell you what ads that I'm referring to, but I don't want to grace anybody with any, you know, publicity here. So.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate, but the fact is that the people that promote those plans are doing something good for the general economy because Medicare itself is just a huge drain on the economy. It's an anchor that stunts the growth of the American economy. We have to grow in spite of Medicare rather than because of it. So the fact that the feds have promised older people like you and I that they're going to pay a lot of our medical bills. Okay, we're past that point. We can't really take that away. So the next thing is, how do they do it? And fiscally, it's smarter for the federal government just to write one check, hand it to an insurance company and say, here, you do it. The overhead is so much less, but you know, it's not a good deal for the enrollees. The people turning 65 that choose Medicare Advantage plans are not, you know, they get 1 year to realize their mistake, and then that's it. After 1 year, they have to show evidence of good health if they ever hope to have to step up to a Medicare supplement plan. And they might lose their opportunity forever if their health deteriorates.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, after working with you for a couple, 3 years now and learning a little bit about the Medicare business, every time I'm in a group of, you know, acquaintances and or family members and or friends, and I bring up the fact, I mean, obviously your friends are going to be somewhere the same age as you. I don't hang out with a bunch of, you know, 20-year-olds.
No,
so
no.
They're going to be somewhere in the same territory. And I bring up the topic of stay away from a Medicare Advantage plan like the plague.
Right.
And you'd be surprised how many people quit looking at me.
Yeah. You know, because they have to choose between you and J.J. Walker or, you know, Joe Nemo.
What kind of a choice is that?
Well, you know, frankly, I can't understand that rationale. But the whole point is they're hearing that message from too many sources. And it's hard for them to ignore that message or to think that message is false, like we know it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make any logical sense to me, but I know that's what they do. So anyway, you know, we've run out of time, Doug.
Oh, boy. Well, it's been a pleasure chit-chatting with you and having the audience join us. So I'm hoping we can do that again real soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, go to Amazon, stock up on your books, get the audios, get the color books from Barnes & Noble, get whatever kind of book you want, because we are now literally entering into the book giving away season.
Yeah, and pretty soon I'm going to have to start writing the next edition, the 2022 edition of this book. So that's going to be a watershed time of the year. When that happens, when the government releases its new numbers for 2022, and I have to go to work on the new edition of the book. So grab the 2021 editions while you can. They're going to be keepsakes.
Yeah. Classics. They're all classics.
Museum quality. well, whatever.
It's kind of like the Book of Kells. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of that, but I don't know what it is.
Oh my God. It's a manuscript.
Okay.
And it's stored, I don't know whether it's Trinity College or which college it is in Ireland, but anyway, the Book of Kells is a big manuscript, hundreds and hundreds of years old, and it was all handwritten, hand-painted, hand-illustrated, and it is probably, according to them, it's the oldest, best-kept manuscript of its type in the world ever located, so your books, I think, are on the way to being competitive with the Book of Kells.
Well, we can only hope. Now, of course, my ancestor, William the Conqueror, or William the Bastard, as he was lovingly known by some of his subjects, caused the Doomsday Book to be written, which was a list of everything of value in England. I mean, they conquered England. They came from Normandy and took care of Harold. I think it was Harold II, and said, okay, we're taking over here. And they shoved Harold out of the way at was it Runnymede? No, that was King John. That was a different thing. It was Battle of Hastings. And so they wrote the Doomsday Book by sending guys out all over England to take inventory of everything that everybody owned. And then came back and it's all still available. So I don't know what the Book of Kells is all about, but the Doomsday Book is probably a close second to that in terms of historical interest, I would guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I would absolutely think so. So
I don't even know what a kell is.
I don't know what a kell is. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger. I don't know what a kell is. Let's find out what a kell is.
Okay.
And
when you say let's, you mean you, right?
that means I will find out.
Oh, good.
I will find out.
Relieved to hear that.
what a Kel is. So anyway, thank you everyone for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. You've been a very great audience today. And I did, you know, while we were on the air, I was beginning to get some feedback on Drew's new announcements. I love him to death. And thank you so much, Drew, for doing it. And if Nora was involved, thank her too. Okay. But we need to sign off because we have run out of time. You've just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma, and the guy that's going to look up with me what a book of Kells really is.
I'd rather eat a Kell than look it up. No, actually, I have to leave that to the Irishman in the team. So I will trust you to come back with an answer. So thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.